Hello and welcome back, everyone, to Up the Poshcast. Today it was Peterborough United 3, Exeter City 3, in a game that Posh looked like they threw it away, but managed to get something back in after a couple of good goals from Harry Leonard, with good work from Kean Hayes and Jimmy J Morgan, respectfully, in the build-up to both of those. And we cannot fail to mention a starting debut goal for Patrick Syker in his first starting appearance in the side. Congratulations to him at 17 years old. That is a incredible achievement. We went through the whole game, talked about the players and the performance, what we could have done to secure a victory today, because there was a pretty wide path to getting a win against an Exeter team that looked frail in places, but sadly, we looked just as frail ourselves at times. Aside from that, we also discussed the GH display being closed today and the atmosphere around the ground being three-sided, which of course is going to be the same for Vale if it goes ahead, where the London Road will be closed instead and the GH will be open. We hope you enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, and comment. Today it was Ashley, Lods, me. I'm Harry, who went through this one with you. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. All right, Peterborough United 3, Exeter 3. Absolutely mad game. I'm not really sure what to make of that. Lods, do you want to have a go?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first half, I think we were probably the better team. I don't think we played fantastically, but we played probably better than average, and Exeter looked worse than average. Kind of went in at half time, 1-0 up, thinking, yeah, this is about right. We should just go and see the game off in the second half. But traditional Peterborough United form, we went into the second half and completely fell off of a cliff, which is a bit of an apparent case the last few games. However, despite going 3-1 down, we managed to claw back to get to 3-1. I'm not sure. I'd say it was probably a fair result, a draw. I'm disappointed with it. I think Exeter were there for the beating. I don't think they were a great team. And definitely before the game, this is certainly a game that I would have expected to win, especially considering the last game we won 6-1 against Wigan. But I have to give credit to the team for coming back from 3-1 down, because especially recently, once we've lost momentum in the second half, we've really struggled to get control of the game. But we definitely did that after a couple of changes to the team. So all in all, I'm disappointed with the draw, but I suppose from the point where we're 3-1 down, I have to commend them for equalizing.
I completely agree with that last bit. I think even though as we go through this episode, I suspect we will be quite critical of some performances and certainly some elements of certain players' performances, what you can't fault about the 11 that was out there for whatever it was, the last 20 minutes, was just the drive to get something out of that game. Their heads were up for all of it. They weren't afraid to try and take risks, shoot maybe in places that they shouldn't have shot, but at least they took the shot. You still had CJ and Akagbwe trying to make line-breaking passes in the 90th minute. You know, I can't fault them or anyone else for trying. And at the end of the day, because they tried, we got a point. It's just a shame we were in that position in the first place, because as I'm sure we'll get on to, I don't think we needed to be.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about today's result is that actually it probably was perfect for the fan base. I think that Luke Williams has got a massively difficult task on his hand over the next 2 months, because we're playing for nothing, right? And what better way to keep everyone's opinions up and attitudes up than to go 3-1 down, not great, but then pull it back to 3-all. And we were dominating for pretty much the last 15 minutes of the game, and probably should feel like we should have gone and got a winner. We didn't. I think maybe we should have had a penalty. So if we're thinking about, well, how do you keep the fans on side and how do you keep them coming back? Because we know that that's important to the club, is making sure that the attendances don't fall off a cliff face when we can't get relegated, we can't get playoffs. I think that today was a great advert for that. Well, yeah, look, it wasn't a spectacle, was it? But we lost 3-0 to Exeter earlier on in the season, didn't we? So I think, although we are disappointed with the 3-3, actually, when you see how far we've come, like, yes, we went ahead, but we've come a long way since we were 3-0 down. And I think we went down with a whimper back in August, whenever it was.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly, that day at Exeter, we played 3 at the back. And today, obviously, a completely different system. And if I remember rightly, it was a system that at Exeter didn't favour CJ. And sadly, today, 2 of the goals came down his side. Without going in on him specifically, I think fundamentally today, both teams were playing extremely wide for very large parts of the game. So you had, for us, Dornelli and Frith, and then CJ and Lisby hugging the touchlines for more or less the entire first half, with the exception of the odd Frith movement inside. It's more like an inside forward, but on the whole, completely against the touchlines. And I couldn't work out if we were the ones leading that and Exeter were following, or if it was their strange, almost five at the back with Sweeney playing as a right wing back, almost in the positioning that he took up. But even though he's like a centre back, I think, isn't he, by trade? And then Niskanen on the right hand side. They got no purchase really on CJ in the first half. And I think Sweeney was starting to get really quite annoyed with Niskanen. But unfortunately, within a minute of the second half starting, CJ forgot that Niskanen was out on the wing still. If you go watch the replay of the first goal, Dornelli has stayed switched on at halftime because he is still hugging his man out on the other touchline. CJ is practically in a centre-back position when the ball goes out to Niskanen, who is able to make a good cross in under no pressure. And suddenly it's 1-1. I don't think CJ was at fault for all three, but you know, two of them have come down his side, and good work from Niskanen, good work from Wareham for all three. But it was a game that I think we lost because we basically forgot that we, you know, the only way to bottle them up and their wide players was to maintain the width ourselves as well. And when we came more narrow, that's when things fell apart. But that wasn't for the whole game, obviously. It was a terrible 10-minute spell, and I was very glad to see that we took the initiative again after that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Sweeney for Exeter, he's your traditional sort of like no-nonsense Brexit centre-back. I was really surprised to see him hugging the touchline like that. So I would definitely say that Exeter have purposely played wide. I can't really understand why they would set up like that. I said that they're not a great team earlier, but I have to admit Niskanen played really well, and then obviously Jaden Wareham's hat-trick was taken really well as well. So I have to give them two credit. Certainly, you can make the case that CJ was at fault for all three goals. I'd say it's a strange one because at Mansfield, I felt like we were allowing the crosses in. We were allowing Mansfield to have the ball in wide areas. At Bradford, it certainly felt we were doing something slightly similar. I didn't catch much of the Barnsley game, so I can't really comment on that. But again, today, it was almost like when we came out in that second half that we were sort of allowing him to have the ball, which is just such a strange... Niskanen's a creative winger. I actually think that he was a left back that got moved to right wing because of his creativity. They've actually changed the system and pushed him further up just to improve that area of the pitch. So to allow him that much space, because Mansfield, we commented it on Final Whistle that Mansfield weren't putting in the first time crosses, and they were quite easy once they did get the ball in to defend because we were heading the ball away. We had Tom Lees and Big Dave. Today, they were playing first-time low crosses into the box. And Jaden Wareham is a striker that... He's not a big striker, is he? He's not one that's going to bully centre-backs. He's not aerially dominant. But he has sort of got that poacher instinct where he can run in between defenders and get on to the end of low crosses and low passes like that. So it did feel like we were playing into their hands by playing narrow. And I don't want to give CJ too much grief for it because... Yeah, he could have done better. Was it an instruction similar to the instruction that he would have been given at Mansfield and Bradford? And to be fair to him, he was good in the first half, like you say, Harry. And to be fair to him, in the second half as well, the possession stuff, he was making a lot of really good passes. He was playing a lot further forward. He almost scored as well. We're all itching for him to get a goal. He almost got his goal. But certainly, yeah, you could make the argument that for all three goals, it could have been prevented had he been a bit better.
Yeah, it is a really weird one with CJ because you don't normally expect to see him. It felt like he was out of position for at least two of them, didn't he? So that was strange. And then I don't want to. It very much feels like the rest of this season is going to be, well, we've got players playing out of position. CJ playing at left back, he's a right back. We've got Kyoso playing at centre back, he's a right back as well. And I think that today you'd notice that with Kyoso, in that, Lod, you said it, where he makes these like sharp bursting runs, and then all of a sudden he's given himself like 4 or 5 yards, and Kyoso just couldn't keep up with him in those moments. And then he's bagged a hat trick, right? Like I looked at it, I didn't realize it was only 22. I think that if there's a chance that we can go and sniff around there and see if we can go and grab him from Exeter over the summer, I think that he'd be a great signing for us next season, because he makes those runs. He's quick. He's relatively agile. He's not afraid to put himself in there. Like, he's not a big striker, is he? But he's dominated our defence today, and our defence isn't the strongest. But I think that Kyoso, alongside CJ, has to take some of the blame. I think that he's tried to play an offside trap for one of the goals, and it's just not worked. And when you step up and try and play an offside trap, you're literally giving your striker extra yards when they get it right. And then he just never managed to get back on at least two of the goals. So it is what it is. We've got a point, and I don't want to go and bash the defence when we've got, I said it last night when we recorded Countdown to Kickoff, we've got three right backs playing. Like, it's never going to be perfect, is it? So fingers crossed they can just keep learning, especially if they are in a position where we're going to have to continue playing right backs across the back four. But it's just take it all with a pinch of salt, isn't it, really? Like, it was exciting, and everybody got their money's worth today from their ticket, didn't they?
I definitely agree with that. And, you know, not just the fact that we're playing three right backs at our back four, also a 17-year-old starting in the hole behind, or was it even in the hole behind? It was almost a centre mid role, wasn't it, for young Patrick Sykert? And hey, first goal, Messi-esque. Absolutely loved it. And it's going to be hard from here, I think, because if he keeps playing well, and he wasn't perfect today. There was a lot he actually needed to work on outside of the goal. But when you have moments of magic like that, it just shows the potential that's there. We could have a challenge on our hands even keeping him if he keeps this level up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it is a difficult one with Sykert, because I think that we saw everything today from him. I'm pretty sure that was his first start for the first team. I'm sure that he's only had sub appearances. And it kind of reminds you back to Mendonca starting at Stevenage, and you think, oh yeah, that was really good, wasn't it? And then he kind of looked like he put all of his energy into the first 45, and then very quickly he was taken off in the second half. And I don't know whether that was just because Williams saw that we were being dominated in the midfield, but it was kind of like, oh, well, we need to protect him. And I think that's going to be another thing that we talk a lot about over the next 2 months, is protecting these young players, not overexposing them. I don't want to say, because I've not got the thing in front of me, Harry, you might still have it up, but we conceded 3 goals whilst Sykert was on the pitch, I think. And then we then brought Keller on. Am I right in saying that?
Correct. Straight off the third goal, Keller came on. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, so I'm not blaming Sykert for us conceding 3 goals, but was he so like overworked from that first half that he was also sort of lacking and not fully switched on and engaged in the game in the second half? We'll never know. But yeah, lovely to it's 4 players basically that he's taken out of the game. If any other player scores a goal like that, we're raving about it, and we're massively excited about how good it is. So it was nice to see. It was a nice moment. Obviously, we're sat in the main stand today, weren't we? His family's there, and they all enjoyed it. So those are the moments that you want to see from your 17-year-old players on their debut.
Yeah, what a great goal it is. I was surprised to see him in the lineup. Obviously, Dara sort of leaked on Hard Truth that Keller and Brian Brady might not be playing due to knocks. There's the potential of putting Joe Andrews in, but we've taken the risk and putting Patrick Sykert in. And what I would say about him is he's obviously done great for the goal. It wasn't like a perfect performance. There was things that went wrong for him, but what he does do, he has this level of confidence where he doesn't get knocked back by things that don't quite work out. Like, he had a shot quite early on in the game, didn't he, that went wide. It was a really bad shot, to be fair. But that didn't stop him from keep carrying on. And I think it was the same at Barnsley, wasn't it? He had a few shots towards the end of the game. And it's nice that we've got the team around him that allow him to do that as well. Because there has been times, we've spoke about it a few times when we've been talking about Archie Collins' replacement, about getting a shithouse in, haven't we? And if you think back to like the Ollie Norburn days, would Ollie Norburn allow Patrick Sicker to play the way he has? Or would he have just showered at him and, you know, made him feel like he was in the wrong for trying to dribble past players and shoot from distance and things like that? Because I think there probably is an argument to say he is. And I guess that's the good thing that Archie Collins does do. He allows the young players to sort of make mistakes and then gives them sort of like the coaching advice that they need to help them, you know, learn from the mistakes that they make, as opposed to just shouting at them and making them feel like they can't express themselves and do what they're good at, which is what Patrick Sicker was able to do today.
Okay, before we continue with the analysis of the game, can we stop bringing up the ghost of Clogger past with Ollie Norburn? Like, I'm sorry, he was crap. There's a reason why he's now playing in League Two. He was not good. He just had it, whatever you want to call it, aura around him that he scared players. He actually couldn't put a tackle in. Keller is a far more accomplished tackler than Norburn ever was. By a country mile, Keller is a better tackler than Norburn. Keller will, at the age that Norburn is now, I suspect will not be playing in League Two like Norburn is. I'm calling it now. Anyway, I agree with the rest of what you said, Lods, which is that I think we do have an environment for Sicker to come through in here. It would be great in an ideal scenario. There'll be fewer injuries. Sicker, as he has done, has fought his way into the first team, makes substitute appearances, ideally in games that we're winning, a pathway that, you know, we got perfectly right with Harrison Burrows. We've probably overextended Dornelli a little bit, but now he's doing a serviceable job in the side. We obviously want to see him pick on from where he's at now. But we didn't, with those guys, have to put them in the squad at 17. Didn't, or rather in the starting lineup at 17, right? But Burrows, Dornelli, Ricky J. Jones, these guys were not starting a mid-season, somewhat meaningful game in February in the 11. So I hope that Sicker gets opportunities as the season goes on. But honestly, most of them come from the bench. That would be the ideal, because then he can come into games and slowly work his way in, especially when there's, you know, when we're a couple of goals up, for example, he can take more risks. Because today, on your point, Ashley, about the midfield frailty, I think all of them were part of this. It goes back to the tactics. Collins, Sicker, I'm not going to say Jimmy J, because actually Jimmy J got himself stuck in really well. But because we played so wide, there were multiple times where the inside centre-back, whatever the hell you call them, like the overlapping centre-back or midfielder, was able to run through the middle because there was space, which is just a natural thing. When you have four or even six players out wide at any given moment, you're going to have space to run into. And that was tough for two players like Sicker and Collins today. I thought that, and I guess we can move off Sicker at this point, I want to talk about Collins, who was both fantastic in moments, but also I thought in the second half, frankly, didn't put a leg in enough. There was one moment in particular where the ball almost broke down from a play on the, what would have been our right-hand wing, Exeter's left-hand wing, and he had to cover defensively. If he'd sprinted over to that ball, he would have got it. And he didn't. Exeter man got it, and he kind of just marked them. This is about on the halfway line. I forget the minute that it was in, but Archie, having got a foot in the build-up for Sicker's goal, I can't remember him getting a successful tackle in the second half, which is really disappointing. I know that's not so much what he's in the side for. In an ideal world, we'd have someone like Woods next to him to do the heavy lifting on that front. But it was a shame to see, in a game that needed a bit of grit, him not provide that when we needed it in the second half. But also, what a great corner that then set up Lennon's second goal, ultimately after Jimmy J's work. So mixed performance from Archie. As always, some positives though.
Yeah, do you know, that is a weird one, Harry, because yeah, I think that the tackling was certainly missing. So I call him our fire putter outer, don't I? And they didn't feel like he was doing much fire putting out. But one thing that I noticed this season, I don't know whether it's just because I haven't been paying attention in previous seasons, Archie Collins wins headers. Like, he's really good at getting up and above a man, like using his body, using his arms to beat the man to the header. And maybe that might be, yes, there wasn't as much tackling going on, but is that a result of the torrid football that Exeter were playing, where they were just lumping it forwards and the ball was in the air and Archie Collins was winning those headers? I agree, there was that moment in the second half where he could have put a foot in and didn't, but a lot of the work that Archie Collins did today was a header, but it then wasn't being picked up as a second ball by another Posh player potentially. But it was one of those, wasn't it? I think that Archie Collins was definitely better in the first half than he was the second, but that the same can probably be said about the majority of the team today, because we went in 1-0 and then for 30 minutes of the second half, we weren't very good.
Yeah, I've noticed Archie Collins is heading, actually, Ashley. Funny you say that. His timing for headers is really good, I'd say. I wouldn't say it's his leap or his heading ability. I think it's just he knows exactly when to jump, and quite often it's before the midfielder, but he still manages to get to the ball first, like almost every time. It is very good for someone of his size playing in that position, definitely. I guess we'd speak about the other midfielder now, and that's Jimmy J. Morgan, who I think is our man of the match. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Another really good performance from him. I'm surprised he lasted 90 minutes, but I'm glad he did, because certainly when we scored that second goal, I think Pemi was about to come on. I think it was that one. And then obviously once that happened, it was kind of like, no, we need these players on now to try and push over this win. Really good. He was already, this is a stat I was saving up, but he was already the second most fouled player in League One before today. And he got fouled in the first minute and said to the referee, that's one straight away. So I think he was expecting to get kicked about a bit. And I guess in a game like that, you sort of notice it more when you're up against it and you can break quickly and there's not really any passing options in the final third. The best thing to do is just win a free kick, isn't it? To kill their momentum and then also keep possession. And it's something that he did. I don't know how many fouls he won today, but it was a fair few, wasn't it? If we had a decent free kick taker and someone that could head the ball in the bloody goal, I think that would be such a dangerous weapon to have, because Matt Garby is also someone that's fouled very often. And then aside from that as well, obviously all the technical stuff, like I said, him lasting the full 90 is great. But the assist for Harry Leonard's second goal was magnificent. He did really well with that. And yeah, if he can do that across a full 90 minutes, I think probably our best creative player in the team, I'd say.
I've just looked at the numbers just quickly. He was fouled 9 times today. However, take that with a pinch of salt, because the attacking stats that they've provided also say that he didn't create a big chance for Posh. So take that as it is.
To put that 9 fouls into perspective, you know, I said that he was the second most fouled in the league before today. That was an average of 2.94 fouls per 90 minutes. So to be fouled 9 times in this 90 minutes, that's like 3 times more than he was being fouled beforehand. So I'd say after today, he's probably the most fouled player in League One.
Yeah, you've completely covered the point about how much of a magnet he was today at getting players to run into the back of him and then get a set piece out of it. I think that there was something intangible about his performance today. The way he was willing to just drive through their midfield, I really do think inspired everyone else. I think Lisby, Leonard, and then Hayes would all have felt we have a chance here, because we're getting purchased through the middle, which should give us opportunities. And all of that purchase was coming through Jimmy J. Just so good to see. Worked as well to make himself available multiple times for passes from CJ, Akagbui, Collins. Stood in the spaces that were free. Once again, going back to the point about how everyone was so wide, that gave opportunities to the middle players. Jimmy J took advantage of that completely. I think that he's technically better than he was at the beginning of the season, which is exactly what you want to see from a teenager becoming a 20-year-old. I suspect he is going to be, come what may, a championship player next season. Sadly, probably for us, it doesn't look like we're going to be with him for that. And I think there's an outside chance here that he's a Premier League quality player one day. So impressed. I'm trying to think if there's anything. I gave him an 8.5. You guys didn't even. I think I gave him the highest out of anyone. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. I'm trying to think if there's anything I want to critique on him. I'm not sure there is. Just maybe if he, I just love to see him score a goal outside the box. I don't know when we last saw that from him. That's all. That's all I've got.
He's a poacher. No, I think I've commented on a countdown to kickoff, as I don't think I'd been on the last two final whistles that we've done, that sometimes he'd maybe been a little bit greedy with his ball carrying and that he'd missed the opportunity to give the ball off. And I think that we saw the complete opposite of that today, in that he made the right decisions at the right time for the team, not for himself. And I think that the assist, the big chance that he created for Peterborough United, take that one, Statos. He was facing towards us in the main stand, wasn't he? And you're kind of like, what are you doing here? But then he did something, right? And how many times have we seen players in that exact same position that the ball goes back to the right back, the ball goes back to the centre back, and then we're back with the goalkeeper? He had the ability and the quality to drop the shoulder one way, drop the shoulder the other way, go back the first way that he wanted to go, beat the man. And once you're in front of the man, like I was ready to scream for a penalty. That was the only way that I saw that going. But the defender didn't foul him ultimately, did he? And then he's put the ball into a dangerous area, and there's Harry Leonard again to put the ball in the back of the net. So I enjoy watching Jimmy J. Morgan. I've criticised that he doesn't give the ball off constantly, but I think today that he really got that down to a T, is it his best performance in a Posher? I'm not sure, but it's definitely up there, isn't it? And if we'd have gone on to win the game, we'd have all been wax lyrical if we'd have gone and scored the winner, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and I think we have to commend Harry Leonard for scoring the two goals, because away at Barnsley, he missed quite a lot of chances, didn't he? I think Dara implied on Hard Truth that he hasn't been training. There's obviously quite a few players that have picked up knocks recently. We know about Danae O'Brien Brady and Brandon Keller, but it sounds like Harry Leonard's really struggling physically as well. And Dara's basically used that as an excuse for why he's missed his chances at Barnsley. But he took his chances today, didn't he? There wasn't really a lot that he did during the game. I actually felt before he scored that he wasn't throwing himself into the challenges that he normally does. The ball's in over the top where he's leaping up the headers against the centre-backs. Felt like he was maybe trying to avoid that a little bit. And again, that might be because he is carrying a knock. But the two chances that he had, he buried away. There was a third one he could have had, but the defender just got it away from him. So I'm not going to blame him for that. But certainly, Harry Leonard at his best, finishing those chances, even if they're out of nothing, even if he's been quiet for the majority of the game, because it's the goals that wins you games, isn't it?
Do you not think that the reason that he wasn't going up for those challenges today was because he knew that his wingers were so far away from him and playing out wide that there was no point in him reaching for those balls, because he knew that the support wasn't there initially, and actually the instruction was the second balls today?
Yeah, maybe, but we said that. Was it Barnsley we said it? There was definitely a game recently where we said the same thing, that he was going up for these headers and there was no one around him. Jimmy J was there. You'd suspect that the partnership between Jimmy J and Harry Leonard would be good enough for Jimmy J to run onto those flick-ons. Maybe Patrick Sickert as well. He's kind of that sort of player. And actually, to be fair, I should probably speak about the flick-on the corner, because that was another thing that we said recently with corners, wasn't it? That why can't we just put Harry Leonard on the near post to win a flick on? That's exactly what we said, and he's managed to score basically that, hasn't he? The corner was like a low driven kind of perfectly head height, and he's literally just flicked it up and it's gone in. It just looked like such a simple goal, and we're complaining about how we can't score from corners, and he's gone and done it.
Yeah, I think I agree with all this. There was definitely some element of intentional second ball today. I think it was Lodgy who said that, right? Like, And that might be some of the explanation why Collins wasn't going into some of the challenges, because you could see we were standing off, waiting for the touch from an extra player and then going in for the tackle afterwards. Maybe that was what Lennon's instructions were. And he did way less playmaking today than he normally does, which, as we know, is not because he's lazy. It certainly isn't. I wonder, it's either tactically intentional or he's carrying a knock. And if he puts in a performance where he does, and I don't mean this in a critical way, he does essentially nothing but get two goals, then what a performance on an injury. I said when we were in the stands, that was a JCH performance all day. It was a be there in the moments you needed to be and bury them. And he did exactly that. I agree. I think he did everything he could for the what would have been our fourth goal of the game. And the extra defender got in front of him. You'd love to have seen both Akagbui and Kyoto do the same at certain times for our goals. But again, we've already said we have some sympathy for them. And you know what? This segues us on perfectly to my favourite player, Kean Hayes. What a corner that was after how you guys hammered him for the one at Barnsley. It was nice to see him get a good corner off. And I thought he showed some endeavour. Like, we're obviously going to sing praises about Leonard and Jimmy J. Morgan, but where'd the corner come from? Hayes, within 30 seconds of coming on, charging down their left back in a way that Frith had been unable to all game, and winning a corner out of it. He takes the corner, gets the assist. Once again, good dribbling with intermediate end product outside of that. I think his shot that went straight at the keeper, there were a few different options ahead of him. It would have been nice for him to look up and see if there was a pass there, because there was. But he gave some threat. I think he was part of the reason we drew rather than part of the reason we didn't win. Let's put it that way. I'm overall positive about Hayes' contribution today.
Yeah, there's some sort of poetic justice, isn't there, that Kean Hayes' last involvement on Tuesday night at Barnsley was that absolute disgrace of a corner, and then pretty much his first involvement tonight was an absolute peach of a corner, which we won't complain about. And it makes you wonder all season, why the fucking hell we haven't been doing that more often, just putting the ball in there and seeing what happens. I actually think that it was probably a little bit of genius from the coaching setup, because where Jake said on Friday night that Exeter are quite a big team, my goodness, were they a small team today, weren't they? I don't know whether they were missing lots of players, and there were certainly some subs that they brought on that bolstered up their height, but their midfielders looked short, their goalkeeper's practically a dwarf. And I think that we took advantage of that. So that was a delight. And yeah, look, Harry, I don't think we'll ever agree on Kean Hayes, will we, until he maybe scores a hat-trick. But then even then, we saw last season Oddo score a hat-trick at Crawley, and you know, we still couldn't agree on how good he was that night. So fingers crossed on Hayes. But it was a relief to see a great ball into the box for a corner, and we've scored a goal. Congratulations to everyone on the set pieces.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I think the best thing that Kean Hayes did today was just to come on the pitch. It's a strange thing to say, but he's a momentum changer, isn't he? Because the fans love him, and he does the thing where he gets the ball and he drives forward, and it doesn't always pay off. There was quite a lot of time where he dribbled past the first man, and then he dribbled past the second man, and then he'd give the ball away, or he'd, like Harry said, shoot and it'll go straight at the keeper. But getting the crowd off of their feet, getting them all to sing and get behind the team, it does, I think it is a big momentum shift. And I do genuinely think that when we were 3-1 down and we brought Kean Hayes on, that the momentum switched and we were all of a sudden on top. And that was the reason why we drew today.
Yeah, you're right. And it happened at Port Vale, didn't it, as well, away when we won 1-0, is that Kean Hayes changed the game. But let's just remember that these players aren't cheerleaders. We don't need to give Kean Hayes some pom-poms on the touchline to get the crowd going up, do we? What we need proper output, goals and assists, which Harry has said we're not quite seeing yet. But maybe there's a chance that we'll get there. I'm still not so confident, though, with Kean Hayes.
What I'm happy to concede about Kean Hayes still, even now, a season and a half in, is he's still inconsistent. I mean, his baseline performance, so what he's capable of at his worst, as it were, is way lower than I think Lisby's baseline performance at this point. And today, I think it was a baseline Lisby performance, right? It was fine. He didn't get a lot of purchase. He did what he could, drove lots of effort and endeavour, could have got the assist for the fourth goal. I don't think there was anything wrong with his cross, the low crossover to Leonard. But didn't get a lot, didn't get a shot on target, didn't set up a chance, unless you want to include that one at the very end. But it was still pretty good. Most of our wingers, we'd be happy to see that level. We'd love to see Frith put in that level of performance every week. We'd love to see Hayes put in that level of performance every week. It was, I think it was one of those where it just didn't quite land. And on most days, that level of performance would have landed for Lisby. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, in some ways. I think he's another one that's a momentum switcher, isn't he? He's another one that can get the crowd off their feet. They will sing his song. I absolutely would say that that chance towards the end that he created was definitely a chance that counts, because the work he did to get into that position was tough as it was. But that pass was actually extremely good under that pressure and the amount of bodies that were in the box to thread it through. I know the defender did just nip it off of Harry Leonard, but even so. And I suppose the thing that I liked about Lisby the most is towards the end when we were chasing that winner, he was relentless with his pressing on the goalkeeper, wasn't he? He was a press of one player, unfortunately. I've commended Jimmy Jay for playing 90 minutes. Harry Leonard was the same. He managed to last 90 minutes, which if he does have a knock, that's fantastic as well. But Kyra Lisby often plays 90 minutes. He's had the same run that everyone else has, apart from going off injured at Barnsley. He's, you know, been basically putting in that effort all the way from start to the end. And today was exactly that again. He might not have made an impact on the game like he normally does, like you say, Harry, but he certainly is desperate to, and he certainly will not give up. He is relentless with his running. He panics defenders all the way through until the end, and such an asset to have, whether he's productive or not. So, yeah, I agree. His baseline performance is still extremely high and extremely useful to us.
Yeah, I think that does deserve some credit, doesn't it? Whilst every other player seems to be taking knocks, getting injured, the only injury of sort is that he spent too long sat on a bus and his hip started to hurt, which, you know, is weird enough as it is. But the fitness differences from the conference through to League One is two levels up, isn't it? So you've got to applaud that he is. He wasn't massively involved under Fergie, and then Luke Williams has brought him in and really made him into a key player. And yes, of course, he scored a hat-trick 2 weeks ago against Wigan. And I don't think that we've seen the best from Lisby over the last four games now, obviously three away, but you're never going to get those repeat performances but he's still putting in that level that you can expect. And you know that he's going to keep the defenders that he's got up against him honest, which means that you're not being dominated. And we mentioned it last week when we were reviewing Bradford, is that Kieran Hayes didn't do the work with his defender, and Lisby was probably guilty of that as well, even though it was over the far side. That's one of the important things that is important from our wingers, is that they keep defenders honest so that our defence isn't being overloaded. And Lisby does that, doesn't he, week in, week out, even if there's not always the output. So I'm sure that he's just as much itching for a goal as everybody else is on the pitch, but fingers crossed that that will come next week at Cobblers.
Yeah. Who else? Who else have we covered? Frith, I suppose we haven't covered. I thought it was all right. I think what I appreciated about Frith, because I think he's worth being positive where we can be, given that I think most of our concerns have been about decision making rather than technical ability on a lot of occasions with him, where he is overplaying or just running into blind alleys. Today, as we saw on multiple occasions in the first half, there was clearly a tactical plan for him to come inside as more like an inside forward. And on every occasion he did that, you could tell he was keeping in mind the pass. And on multiple occasions, he did pass. I was a bit confused by Gab Sutton's tweet on Frith, suggesting that he held onto the ball for too long. I think that was completely... one, it was unfair on his performance today. And also, Gab Sutton, you should have seen how he's been playing the rest of the season. Like, if you thought he held onto the ball too long today, go watch some of the previous performances. But not a lot of purchase. I think that there was one moment where, and it would have been speculative, in the first half, he probably could have taken a shot on the edge of the box rather than passing it off to, I think it was Collins. But I think if he's going to commit to, as I think he did today, following whatever Luke Williams has told him to do as the tactical plan and trying to stick to that, that will pay dividends in time, because he has, when he gets it right, extremely good technical ability, especially in tight spaces. I think he's one of two or maybe three players in the squad who could have done Sykut's goal today. Like, Frith is probably capable of what Sykut did today. Obviously, Sykut is, because he did it. And maybe, you're going to hate this, Ash, maybe Hayes as well. Outside that, you know, dancing around four different players on the edge of the box and getting a shot off, I'm not sure who else can do it. And given that Frith, I think, can, we should hope, I hope we can stick with him, basically, and he can buy into the Luke Williams ideas and become essentially more tactically astute, which has been the main criticism so far.
Yeah, I do wonder with Declan Frith if actually there was too much pressure on him when he came in. And it's never easy, is it, to be labelled as the next party by the guy that's brought you in. And actually, should we have been expecting him to have come straight in, replaced Kwame Poku and set the world alight? I'm not sure. It's very rare that that happens from a Peterborough United signing. And maybe it is now, what, 6 months down the line, if you say 3 months under Luke Williams, that we're starting to see the fruits of the labour on the training pitch. I think my only... I have one frustration with Declan Frith today, and it was just that there was a moment where him and Lisby were both breaking in the first half, and the ball just, like, it just stopped. Like, I'd just get it out of your feet, man. I'd just drive forwards with it. Like, I know that seems probably really, like, hypercritical, but the space was there. They were 2-on-1, and then all of a sudden he's having to stop. And I think we retained possession, but by that point, Exeter have managed to get the men back, and it was a chance that we could have gone... Was it before the first goal? I'm not sure. It would have either been 1-0 or it would have been 2-0, and then it's a completely different game for Peter United. And like Lodz has mentioned earlier, Exeter aren't fantastic, but neither are we. But at 2-0, it's a completely different game. And they're just those moments that you hope that in the next game, rather than the ball getting completely stuck, he manages to carry it forwards and then go on and go from there, basically. But it wasn't to be for Frith today. But again, like Tuesday night, I think that it was a good performance from him, even if there wasn't the final output that we all expect from Peterborough United wingers.
Yeah, I know Declan Frith got labelled as the next Poku replacement, and I know he's a few years older than what Poku was when we first signed him, but we signed Poku when we were in the Championship, and then we had the 22-23 season where we lost at Hillsborough, then the 23-24 season, and it probably wasn't until that season that we first started to see the talent that Poku was. So you think he'd already played two full seasons at that point, and then it wasn't until his fourth season where he'd become a proper star. So actually, again, I know he's a few years older and you'd expect him to be a few years further ahead in his development. But if you apply the same logic to Declan Frith and say that it might take him 2 or 3 years to fully develop into a star, we've still got ages yet. We can see, like you've mentioned there, we can see in brief periods that he has the talent. And we are only 6 or 7 months in. So we might well see a different Frith next season. It might be the season after, but I do think we should stay patient with him because the talent's definitely there, and we were patient with Poku and we got the rewards from that.
All right, I think we're there. There's probably a couple of players we didn't completely cover, but I think that sums up the game fairly well, doesn't it? Anything else that we want to discuss? A closed GH today?
Well worth a discussion. It feels like it's been ages since the GH was closed, and obviously the Backwall Pounders decided to smash the GH to bits, which meant that the club had to order some new blue, white and black seats, and they weren't here in time. Fingers crossed they're in time for the Port Vale game, which may still be postponed. Who knows? But I think that what today gave a massive, like, sort of dose of reality about how bad the London Road end is compared to the GH. All I've seen on my Twitter feed is, like, the toilets. There's a Toba put a picture up. The toilets are blocked. People moaning about having to go to the toilets. The bogs are crap. The queues are crap. it's time, isn't it? Like, realistically, we've got 2 weeks until the Port Vale fixture now, and fingers crossed we get to play it. But I really think that, and I want to be careful with my words about when I talk about the atmosphere, but it was poor today, wasn't it? And I appreciate that the game wasn't exactly a spectacle, and going 3-1 down, it's never going to be easy. But yeah, whenever the GH is closed, it just feels like something's missing. And even I didn't enjoy, I didn't want to be in the main stand today. I didn't enjoy watching the game from there. I like being in the GH, and it wasn't so much that it was bad in the sense that I was displaced and whatever not, but the GH is the best stand in the thing. And I just hope that all of the London Road End moaners that tell us all that, oh, it's tradition, blah, 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 all of this nonsense, I just hope that they have a good experience in the GH against Port Vale, because today was crap and everybody's moaning about how rubbish the London Road End is.
You mentioned the atmosphere being bad today. I actually don't think the atmosphere was bad today. However, it wasn't bad today because the main stand and the family stand got involved in the cheering on of the players. We're never going to expect those two stands to sing songs, but there was a come on, Posh. There was a bit of chanting from on the corners from three sides. And I thought it was great, actually. That was one of the better atmospheres I've seen at home this season. And we managed to do it with only three sides of the ground open. And that will be exactly the same on the 7th if the game goes ahead, where it will be three sides of the ground open again. And I think that'll be a real litmus test, because if it's even louder on the 7th, I think that will definitively prove that it's better for the players, because the players will always respond more positively to an atmosphere that is cheering them on rather than one that is muted. And one final thing as well, because I've not really any qualms with the London Road End. I just think that fans should have the choice. I personally would be more than happy to have season tickets available in the GH and the London Road End and just let fans decide at that point. But those who aren't sure, or rather think, I'm confident that London Road is for me and I don't want to go in the GH and have never been in the GH, give it a go on the 7th. I'm telling you, I've been persuaded, because I was in the GH many times 5+ years ago and thought, this is all right, nothing special. It's become special now. It's become special because of the groups that go in and really have turned it into something that I don't think we've seen since the old days of the London Road when it was a true terrace.
Yeah, and one point that's worth mentioning as well, and whether you're a 12-year-old that listens or an 80-year-old that listens, I think that the really important thing from this trial game is that if you buy your ticket in a particular seat, you have to be stood or sat in that seat, because what we don't want is we don't want people that have moved over from the London Road End, they're giving it a try, they go and stand where their seat is allocated to them, and then there's a group of people that are all stood there and they basically refuse to move. That's not going to give the London Road End season ticket holders the positive experience that they want from the game, which is what everybody wants. Like, we want people to be converted to GH displayers. And if you're stood in their seat, you're going to fuck it up. So don't, I'm going to say it, don't be a dick. Don't smash up the seats. Don't stand where your ticket isn't. And just play the game, right? Let's make sure that it's a positive atmosphere. Let's make sure that we've got drumming from the first minute to the last. Make sure that everybody's involved. Like, bring back the classic chants, all of that sort of stuff. I heard very briefly that there was a left side of London Road trying to get started today. It didn't materialise into too much. But let's try and do that in the GH for that game. Like, let's make it feel like home. And then, fingers crossed, all of those people that are pulling against the GH will flip sides, they'll pull for it. So I think that's all that we can ask. Let's not be silly. Let's enjoy it. I think that today was actually a real show of how poor the match day experience can be if you have the GH closed. And look, we know the players like having the GH open. So yeah, let's see where we go, and fingers crossed for Port Vale. Hopefully Port Vale lose against Bristol City. That's what we're all hoping for, isn't it, right?
All right. Sorry, are Port Vale playing Bristol City?
Yeah, it's an FA Cup game. So this is the thing that's happened. Their pitch is so shit that they've had like 40 games called off. And most recently, FA Cup weekend, they were meant to be playing Bristol City at home. That got called off. Then the first available fixture date that they could play was 4 days before they could playing us on, what is it, must have been the 3rd of March. If they win that game, their fixture's already been confirmed against Sunderland on the Sunday. So the game gets called off 3 days before it's due to be played. It's bizarre.
And it's worth pointing out that that game has already been picked for Sky as well. So there's no chance of the FA Cup game being moved if they do beat Bristol City.
I did not realise this was the reason. First, when I just heard there's a chance that Port Vale will be off, I just assumed it was another international break coming. I did not know it was because of the FA Cup. So there we go. You've taught me something, and hopefully you've taught some of our listeners something if they didn't know that already. All right. At least it was entertaining today, guys. 6 goals, 5 in the second half. We can't complain with those kind of numbers. Thank you all for listening. Please like, subscribe, comment. Tell us what you thought of the game. Tell us if you're going to be in the GH. Tell us if you are a London Road till I die faithful, and you will be, you know, standing where you want to stay in the London Road come what may. We want to hear it all in the comments. But with that, thank you, and as always, up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast. By the way, Ashley said that the atmosphere was poor, and then Harry, you said, I'm going to back you up here, and then you came in and said it was one of the best atmospheres you've ever seen at London Road. I'm like, what?
And also, can we, I think that what needs to be clarified about this whole, part of the reason
Best I've ever heard is not right, but anyway, go on.
Part of the reason that the London Road Enders are worried about the GH is because they won't be able to stand because there's not safe standing. Total fucking bullshit. They'll be able to stand because there's things...
Stand the whole game.
...in place. Yeah, because I saw it at Bradford. There were large pockets. There's no safe standing at Bradford. I've gone and looked at Nottingham Forest as well. I'm pretty sure they don't have any safe standing in the Trent End at Nottingham Forest. Standing. Like, you can go and find examples. It's a total myth that people won't be allowed to stand in the GH.
I'm pretty
sure. The
club
just has to put in a percentage reduction of seats, which I think is about 10%. They basically just don't sell the ends.
I'm pretty sure there's some grounds in the country, like Elland Road's one of them, where 80% of the fans just stand up all game. Like Sheffield United's another. Like there's so many stadiums where the fan base just stand all game. And it's not safe standing all the way around, is it?
If the GH does become the home end, they will put safe standing in eventually. It just won't be there straight away. And I'm sure that somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, if we're going to include this as a section. If you said you're going to do it, you get a free pass, basically. Because they can't expect these things to happen overnight.
What, from the EFL?
Yeah.
Do you mean the club will get a free pass from fans if they say we'll put in safe standing eventually? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean like from the authorities, the safety authorities, they're the ones that don't like the standing, right?
Okay.
If they say we can't do it this summer, there's not enough time, we'll do it next summer, then they can't argue against it and say no, you can't. And like Lord says, you go to these massive grounds, they're all fucking stood up anyway. What are they gonna do? Close down Elland Road for every single home game because they don't sit down. Not a fucking chance. Fucking hate it. Shit off. Don't even go
up
in there.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Up the Poshcast.